welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 270. I am your host, James Gilmore. And joining me again for the second time in as many weeks, the triumphant return of Harry Slater.
Hiya. Hello, everyone. Yay, I'm back.
You are.
By popular demand.
And slightly iller than before, weren't you?
Yes, I am poorly and full of legal drugs and sweets. So,
and Lucozade, I hear.
Yeah, and Lucozade, and just anything I could get my hands on that had sort of the pretense of making me feel any better.
You sound surprisingly peppy.
Yes. I'm seeing colours and shapes rather than the actual world, but it's going quite well.
Excellent, outstanding. PT is usually quite up regardless, and then he has energy drinks and it transports him to a whole new realm of insufferability. You're keeping it moderate. I like it. You seem to have reached a nice kind of balance between interesting and dead.
that's what I aim for in life.
I thought so. Good stuff. So Pete's elsewhere this week. I think he's at a wedding, or he's bass fishing, or skateboarding. I don't know what he's doing. And Keith is doing busy things, as he always does. But as you've noticed, we're starting to get some new people onto the podcast, lovely listeners. So expect some fresh faces, or I suppose voices, being as it's an audio medium, over the next few weeks. We're mixing stuff up a bit. There's been a nice influx of new listeners, and so we want to give you something to listen to. It's been kind of an interesting week this week. Not necessarily the scale of new games. Like, there's not been millions of them that have come out, but one in particular has been a really, really pleasant surprise, and we're going to talk about it in some detail later on. But first, some updates. Harry, do you have Horn?
I do, actually, on my Android device, but that doesn't really tie in with this story.
No, never mind. Oh, well. But if you do happen to have Horn on your iPhone or iPad, and yes, we are talking about a game and not some disgusting kind of double entendre, you filthy, filthy buggers. If you happen to have it, then you'll know what it is, i.e. Infinity Blade, with a bit of free roaming action, kind of like a bit Zelda-y, you said to me earlier. I never actually played it myself, but it's a very pretty looking game. If you've already got it, then you know what it's all about. If you haven't got it, then you can download it right now for free. Absolutely nothing. It's done by Phosphor Games, and we can tell you it's dead pretty. We gave it a fairly decent review as well. I think it was an 8 or 9.
I think it was a 7, was it 7? Or an 8.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
A couple of technical issues, apparently, but it was fairly ambitious and, I say, absolutely gorgeous-looking thing. So if you wanted to give it a look, it's available for iPhone and iPad right now for nothing. So check it out. It'll change in the next few days, so grab it soon if you want it. Also, speaking of good-looking things, Oceanhorn, which was that Zelda-esque game, and I say that, if you imagine Zelda-esque written in block capitals with neon lighting behind it and fireworks and explosions, because was it Zelda-esque. It was good fun. Like, we gave it a 7 or an 8 or something.
An 8. That one definitely got an 8.
Because it plays very well. It looks beautiful. It's got big kind of expansive worlds, and the campaign goes on for quite a while. So very good.
I think we gave it such a good review because it is the closest you'll ever get to playing Zelda on your iPhone, basically.
That's the thing,
isn't it? That, you know, it copies in a nice way. It, you know, it's an homage, but it does it really well.
And I think they're fairly candid about it as well. No, they're not trying to pretend like, oh no, this is based on something entirely unique and original. It's a beautiful snowflake, because it's not. It's clearly Zelda. But yeah, it is a very good version of Zelda on your iPhone and iPad. If you haven't played it yet, because it was a premium title, I think it was about £3, $5, something like that. They've released Oceanhorn Benchmark Edition, which essentially gives you the first chapter of the game for free. So you can download it, give it a try, and if you like it, it gives you the option to upgrade to the full game. So if you were put off by the price tag, or you weren't sure about it in any regard, you've got no excuse now not to download it and give it a look. And if you do like Zelda-type games, and you've been aching for one to play on your iPhone, like Harry says, this probably is about as close as you're going to get. So it's probably worth a look if you've got the inclination. Also, Tilt to Live 2, subtitled Redonkulous, which I had to say in a review, and it made me cry inside. But it is, A, very good. Like, really quite good. I didn't play the first one when it came out, did you?
No. Didn't get them.
It's like a kind of asteroid-esque game where you're a little arrow in the middle of the screen, and you kind of zoom around the screen shooting just enemies and objects that are flying around all over the place, sort of single-screen levels. But it's all done via tilt control, and it's incredibly sensitive and really responsive. Tilt controls can be a bit hit and miss, as we all know, but like this one, it was like you hold it kind of flat and ever such subtle movements, and you get really direct and precise control out of it. And as a result, it's really, really fun. Hectic, frantic, arcadey fun. There's a new bit DLC that has emerged for the game. It's called the Brimstone Pinball DLC. And what it gives you is a massive, indestructible fireball that kind of blasts into the arena and starts bouncing around, smashing into enemies. In that mode, if you're using it, if you're playing through the DLC, it's your only weapon. So you have to, like, smash into it in order to ricochet it off the walls and off the enemies, hence the whole pinball mode thing. It looks kind of good fun. There's a trailer for it up on the site. It does cost money. It's 69p or 99 cents as an IAP, so you will need to cough up for it, but it kind of looks like a bit jolly. And if you're still into the game, if you're still playing Tilt to Live 2 right now, then this might be just the kind of injection of content you've been looking for. We all remember Earthworm Jim, don't we, Harry?
Yes. He was an earthworm and he had a spacesuit and it was jokes.
It was jokes. He rocketed through the sky.
Yes.
And I understand also quite a groovy guy as well.
Quite groovy.
Yeah. Anyway, why the hell are we talking about Earthworm Jim? So, there is a reason. The designer of the Earthworm Jim game, David Perry, this week announced an interesting new game, particularly for racing fans and comic book fans. It's called SXPD The Rookie. And what it is a graphic novel-style futuristic racer, kind of in the style of Death Race, only everything's black and white and comic book-looky, as if it was that Mad World game that was on the Wii.
It's got a very 2000 AD look to it.
Yeah.
It looks like it could be a Dread comic.
Yes, yes, which is probably one of the reasons why I'm excited, because it looks kind of cool. So if you can go to the site and see images of it, obviously, and there's a very, very short teaser trailer which got us, you know, kind of interested. So the way it's built is supposed to be like half comic book and half futuristic racing game. So you get, like, from what I can understand, a presented comic book panel by panel, almost like you're reading one of the, you know, the comics that you can get on Comixology or whatever. But obviously that's how they present the story, and then you click to the next bit and you dive into a race. And the races play out, it looks a bit like Wipeout. It's kind of futuristic, low to the ground 3D racer, but it's all in black and white, with the occasional flash of colour, like a bit of red or a bit of blue here. I think there's a police squad involved. You are taking the role of a police officer in this all-female police squad, and racing around. So there's a bit of blue and a bit of red on the lights, but apart from that, completely monochrome. And it looks awesome!
Yeah, like, it really does.
Really, really does. I advise you to go and look at the trailer, because it sort of gives you a little flash intro and shows you some still panels, and then just at the end of it, you get a flash of the race. It's like, I want to be playing this right now! I'm a Wipeout geek anyway, so this kind of stuff floats my boat regardless. Apparently, it is based loosely on the ZX Spectrum game Death Chase, which, if you happen to have a ZX Spectrum, in which case you're probably too old to be listening to this podcast, you should probably be on it rather than listening to it. It was cracking at the time. I don't know how it stands up 25 years later.
Probably right away on the tape.
Probably.
That's sad, isn't it? There's a sad vision.
It's true, that whole thing where all that media will eventually be lost in time, like tape in acid. A famous Blade Runner quote that nobody remembers, but it was there. There's a whole series of consoles, all of which were tape-based, and tape deteriorates by its very nature, like film. It gradually deteriorates over time. So there's a good chance that those games will properly be lost forever.
I think the thing is, though, it's, you know, sometimes you get re-releases of them on the App Store. Mm. The first time you've been able to play it for 25 years, and then you play it, and it's like, old games are rubbish.
Yes, yeah, I remember why I like my Xbox One. But we talked about this a little bit before, the fact that there's no kind of universal storage medium for digital content. Like, this is one of the things George Lucas was talking about, and it's about the most sensible thing he said in about 20 years, which is that, like, we have no standardized system for storing digital data. we all have different ways of doing it, different file formats. Some are stored on hard drives, which have moving parts, which will eventually break. Some stuff is flash now. And in the future, in 50 years' time, there's a good chance that a lot of this data will be lost or unreadable.
So we should sort of like start a programming database. Because obviously they still exist as strings of code.
Yes.
Even if they don't exist as bits of tape. So you could just write them down.
I'd like to think that as a backup, every developer who made one of those games just had a little book sort of published as well with just the code in it.
Yeah, that's, you know, that was like an early download.
Exactly.
You bought the book and then copied it into your Spectrum.
And presumably in the future, because now we're all high tech and we've got things like the PlayStation Eye and Kinect 1, then you could probably just hold the book up to the camera.
Yeah.
And just like, flick it, like riffle through it, and that'll upload it.
Like Short Circuit.
Exactly. Oh, we've got this sussed. No data.
Call
ever.
Someone.
Someone important. Well, if you don't have the time to do that, then you probably could play this instead. We don't exactly know when it's coming. It's going to be sometime this May, but we don't have a specific date. But we do know it'll cost £1.49 or $1.99. Check out the trailer again on the site. It looks really cool, and I'm kind of psyched, and I want to play it immediately. So check that out. If you happen to be a fan of Anamita design. I always say it wrong. It's Amanita design. I always mix
I always
up
get that wrong, yeah.
Yeah, the M and the N. Which are a Czech bunch who produced one of my favourite point-and-click adventures from the last 10 years, which is Machinarium.
Mm.
I loved that game.
It's very good.
Yeah, it was out in about 2009 on PCs, and then it took a while, but eventually wound up on iPad and Android and all that lot, and it was just as lovely there as it was in its original form. They released another game after that called Botanicula, which is another point-and-click adventure in their style, much brighter and more colourful and more luscious than Machinarium, which was kind of grimy and rusted and industrial. This one starred a group of like plants and plant-like creatures, so like some dude with a feather in his head and like a little spore and like a twig, and they all had to work together, so it was almost like a team-based point-and-click adventure, which you had to use each of their individual skills to overcome problems. It was out about a year or two ago, I'm going to say. It has now been announced that it's going to be coming to iPad again in early May. It takes them a while to get it over to iOS, but they do make it over eventually. Have you played this one? Did you?
I have not played this one, no. Okay. No, I spent a good chunk of time playing Machinarium on my brother's Mac.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It was his MacBook, and I think I just stole it and played that, and I really enjoyed it, but I never sort of got around to playing Botanicula.
Well, no, it's a lot brighter. It's still that kind of slightly whimsical, slightly surreal design, but it is just bags of character and really, really, really charming, and it's going to be great. So we are going to say that it is, what is it, the third entry in a series, because like, oh no, this is the second
this
entry.
This is the second, the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. Will be the last one, because they did a bunch of games beforehand on PC. I can't remember what they're called, but they were like Samorost or something like that. It was a weird, very, you know, even more surreal than Machinarium, yeah, almost. And then Machinarium marked a kind of departure in art style, where it was all kind of drawn rather than, I think they used some real elements in Samorost, but Machinarium was kind of like a new chapter. And then came Botanicula, and then there'll be a third one, which is really good news, because I would love there to be like a trilogy which spanned these different universes but shared a sort of similar art style and a similar theme. So yeah. I am dead psyched for this. Early May, keep your eyes out on it on iPad, and it apparently will be coming to Android as well a little bit later, and possibly iPhone too. But just at the beginning, iPad only. Speaking of things jumping from platform to platform, I'm a bit of a Silent Hill geek, at least the earlier games, because, you know, we all know what happened after 3. It all went a bit weird, but I mean weird in a bad way.
Negatively weird.
Exactly, and not in that great Silent Hill want to tear your own face off weird way, which is the best. So, if you are a PSP owner, which I am, I've still got one tucked in a drawer somewhere, I think, you might have played either Silent Hill Origins. Oranges.
Oranges.
That was a different game. Terrifying, that game. Yes, Undead Bananas. With nurses' outfits. Silent Hill Origins and or Silent Hill Shattered Memories. Origins was kind of more a straight down the line Silent Hill game, in which you took control of this guy who'd come back from war, I think, some kind, if I remember rightly, and was exploring the town, and it was pretty standard Silent Hill. Silent Hill Shattered Memories was a weird, like, reboot departure thing, in which they got rid of the whole fog aspect that they always had, like ash descending from the skies,
yeah.
And replaced it with ice.
Ice.
Yeah, it was all icy and snowy. And so when the universe did that weird shift from real world into surreal, nasty death world, which in the original games, everything went kind of horrible and corroded and people had knives that squeaked along the floor. This time, it went from a normal kind of environment, greyish environment, to ice. And everything suddenly went whoomp and went wintry death. Which was, I mean, credit to them for doing something different.
But snow's not that scary. Really.
That was my problem with it.
It's quite nice.
Yeah.
Build a snowman.
It's like, oh, it's a winter wonderland. This isn't particularly terrifying. They still had some odd creatures running around. Specifically these bits where creatures would come charging at you and jump on your back. And you had to run away from them. They had, like, sections, specific sections in which there were action bits, set pieces almost, where you had to run away and escape the guys pursuing you. But mostly it was a puzzle affair. It was interesting because on the Wii, it had a lot of context-based physical control stuff. So, for example, one of the primary components was a phone, and it would cause the Wii controller to, like, ring, and you'd hold it up to your ear, and then the audio would actually come out into your ear like a phone. And that kind of stuff was sort of cool. On the PSP, I thought it was lacking because it didn't have any of that, and it just felt like a slightly, I don't know, lackluster PSP game. However, after that slightly...
Selling it.
I know, right? Downbeat lead-in. They're porting both of those games, Origins and Shattered Memories, onto the Vita. The thing which is unknown at this point is whether they're giving it the old HD lovely spruce-up treatment or whether it's going to look pretty much exactly the same. I'm going to guess that it's going to be a digital download. Let me just double check. Yes, it is.
It is, I believe. It's like £8 each, I think.
That's right. So, like, yeah, that. It'll be £8 and 10 euros and probably about 10 bucks as well, I would imagine, 10, 12 bucks. But it'll be coming to PSN sometime in the near future. They're not awful. To be fair, like Shattered Memories, despite being a bit cold and, to me, not that scary, was one of the better Silent Hill games of recent memory.
Was it better than the last Vita version where it was like a ridiculous dungeon crawler?
It was a top-down multiplayer thing, wasn't
that
it?
That was so bad, that game.
It was bizarre. I couldn't, like, what were you thinking? Like, taking this kind of very surreal horror franchise based on atmosphere and turning it into this, like, multiplayer, like, single-screen, almost shoot-em-up thing?
It was like Gauntlet or something.
It was bizarre, and it got a horrible rating. So, yes, it is better than that. Both of them are better than that. And I suppose better than... I don't know if it's better than the most recent one, Downpour, where they went, instead of ice, they done ice, they did rain for Downpour. They're working their
way
through.
Maybe the next one will be, like, nice and sunny.
It will. It'll be Silent Hill, slight breeze.
Attacking you with, like, sombreros and...
So we'll keep you informed when you have an actual release date for it, but if you're interested in the history of Silent Hill, it might be worth a download, and it's kind of cheap, so, you know, no harm in taking a look. Finally, in the newsy section, we'll cover this, even though it's on slightly dubious legal ground, I suppose. If you have an iPhone or iPad, and you don't have a Nintendo DS, but you might like to play Nintendo DS games...
That you have legally acquired.
Yes, they have somehow legally acquired the ROMs through entirely legal means. You can now do so! Sort of. There is a new Nintendo DS emulator, which has come out on the App Store. It works for non-jailbroken devices. Usually you'd have to have a hacked iPhone or iPad in order to do it, and ROMs have been around for ages. Lots and lots of apps have already come out that let you do it, but usually you have to hack your iPhone or iPad and invalidate the warranty and all that kind of stuff. However, there is a one called NDS for iOS, which is a catchy...
You could imagine them writing a jingle for that.
Yeah.
From the App Store now.
You have missed your calling, sir.
No, basically.
It is currently out on the App Store. I don't know how much it costs, and we didn't link to it.
I don't think it's on the App Store.
Oh, isn't it?
You go to their website and get the... It's not APK, it's the other word that I can't remember.
Oh.
The file from there, and then you install it through iTunes. It's the whole guide that Mark wrote about how to do it.
Yes.
But I don't think you can actually get it actually from the actual App Store.
Okay, which sounds extremely reputable.
Yes.
But like we said, we did actually write a guide to teach you A, how to get hold of the app, like Harry said, and B, how to get games up and running on it. It's been tested out by someone, I don't know who, I'm not going to name names, and we can report that it does actually work. It does depend on what game you're trying to run. If you're running like more of the high-end 3D visual games, it stutters a little bit. You know, it struggles to keep up, which isn't surprising. But if it's, you know, some of the older titles, perhaps, I'm sure it would handle Ace Attorney no problem. So you can technically do it. Whether you do so is another thing, and we're not endorsing that you do this either way. But our job is to report news, and this is a news.
Hard-hitting news.
That's right.
There is a part in the tutorial that we have written to tell... You have to change the time settings right. on your phone to February the 8th, 2014, to actually make it work. I don't know if this is a late April fool, to be honest.
This sounds well legit. So, yes, be warned and all attempts at your own risk, and we're not held responsible, etc., etc., disclaimer. But it's a thing that you can do. I've been really tempted to get a DS recently. The 2DS, actually.
The Twads.
Yeah, I think, even though it's a big block and whatnot, I think that the 3DS effect is kind of bollocks.
Yeah, this makes me feel sick.
Yeah, and it's just blurry and a bit rubbish, and I feel the same thing on TVs and stuff like that.
Mm.
So I was quite tempted by the 2DS, and I think you can get them kind of cheap now. I saw one on sale for like 60 quid or 70 quid new. More tricky to fit in your pocket, granted. I've never actually got my hands on one, though.
I think the way I see the 2DS is it's not really a... If you're getting one, you're probably just going to play at home with it. It's not... Because it doesn't really fit properly in your pocket, does it? It's more
That's
just
true.
For sitting on a sofa and having a bash. Not yeah. in a weird way. But yeah, I had a 2DS before they were called that. I had a DSi, and I really liked it.
Ah, yeah. The slightly smaller one, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then I traded that in for a swanky Zelda 3DS. Ooh. That I don't really play because I got a Vita and I was like, and then I get really bad hand cramps playing them. 3DS, it's all kind of square and you don't really know where to put your fingers.
That is true. If you are a large fingered chap, then it's can be quite fiddly and awkward. Yeah. But equally, you're right, everything's squared corners and everything, and there's only the one stick on one side and everything, and it can be a little bit. You're right, a little bit kind of lock. I was going to say lock jaw there, but... Lock,
how do you play lock, games?
This is where I've been going wrong. The 3D effect isn't working. This is rubbish. Yeah, you're right, it is more of a stay-at-home thing. But then can you really put the Vita in your pocket comfortably?
I don't.
No, I mean, it's like too nice.
I think you can actually just about fit in the pocket, but I'm always worried because those lovely little analog sticks just stick up that little bit further, and yeah. I always think, you know... Yeah, I'm looking at it quite longingly now. It's just sat next to me. Oh, aren't you lovely?
I'd be afraid of like wanging it off the edge of a wall or something, you know, little jutty outy bits.
Yeah.
There's no emulator for the Vita, I don't think. But if you wanted to try your luck, that is a thing you could do with NDS for iOS. But, you know...
But should you?
Yes. ... parentheses. And about this week, Hitman Go, which I'm officially labelling the Hitman game that you didn't know you wanted, but you really do. I'm going to talk about it later on because it's the kind of game I've been playing this week. It is not what you would expect, so don't go into it expecting a third-person action shooter sneak-em-up thing. It is a sort of top-down board game-style doodad, very good-looking. I'll explain more about it later, but you kind of want to hear about it because I think it's sort of Game of the Week territory, quite surprisingly. It's out right now. You can get it for £2.99 or $4.99, but stick with us for the opinion because it's coming and it's exciting. Also, out this week, big news, Hearthstone Heroes of Warcraft has finally gone global. It's still only available on iPad, and I think it only will be available on iPad, at least for the foreseeable future.
I don't think it would work on a smaller screen, really, unless you got into half dip and couldn't see what your opponent was doing.
Yeah, that's
true.
There
are ways to do it. But
I suppose the camera could pan up and switch between people, because if I'm right, they are working on it. They want to bring it to iPhone and Android as well. But it is a game that clearly like works probably best on tablet. I played it when they released it in Canada. They did the soft launch stuff, and I'm not a big CCG guy, but I really enjoyed it. I was impressed and surprised at how much I did like it, because production value's through the roof.
It's got that shiny Blizzard polish on it, very much so.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I played it when it was soft launched as well. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I think I had a bit of trouble because I was making a video of it, and it needs an internet connection. And I was at someone else's house. Not in a weird way. I don't break into people's houses to make videos. Well, sometimes I do, but not for the site.
That would be awesome.
And I couldn't find the network password, so I had to play it through a tethered Android phone, giving a terrible 3G connection. Because I've got 3G on my iPad, but apparently the house was coated in tinfoil or something.
Oh, dear.
But it was a bit weird when I was playing it, because it was really sort of sluggish.
Like, I didn't even notice that it needed a connection. I had no idea.
It won't even let you get into the game unless you have an interwebs connection, and quite a strong one, because I had a couple of bars of 3G on my iPad and it just refused to connect to the game, and it won't let you do anything. And once I did get it going, it was really weird, because I'd like, you know, you just swipe cards up to like have fights and stuff. Well, I'd do that, and it would take like 30 seconds to actually recognize that I'd done that and actually send the card up. So I was kind of swiping repeatedly on the iPad to try and get it to work. So,
oh wow,
have a good internet connection.
That is the advice. Yeah. If you're going to break into someone's house and do it, then make sure it's a house with infinity.
Yeah, or with a card with their password on, so you can get on as well.
That's consumer advice here. This is why you guys come to this podcast, surely. I didn't experience any of that, I'm going to say, but I had no idea. I was just doing it in my house and I had a connection, so I guess that didn't crop up, but that's worth bearing in mind. They might have made it a bit cleaner now, because obviously soft launch stuff is designed to iron out those kind of kinks. We've had nothing but positive feedback on it from the stuff we've published. I really enjoyed it. It's slick as hell. You can see like me playing it for an hour, learning how to play it essentially over on AppSpy. We've got reviews upcoming on PG. I think we don't have it up yet because it's only just arrived. And we usually do a three-part review for free-to-play games, because it takes a while to kind of get a feel for them and work out whether there are any barriers.
I think it's important sort of to say it's not bad free-to-play. It's very good free-to-play. It's that it is basically a card game that you've been given the first bit of, and if you want to spend more money on it to get better and get better cards, then you can. So it's in that, like, League of Legends, the other one that I always forget the name
Dota?
Of.
Dota 2?
That's the one, yeah. That sort of area of free-to-play where there's no energy timers, there's no buy this new bag of currency for a cheap thing and get a thing with your stuff and then do the things and watch this video of a completely unrelated thing. And that's pretty much it.
I did a video this week for AppSpy about that, the pay-to-pay thing, as I don't know if that's already been coined, but that's what it feels like to me when I'm playing these games. It was spurned on by recently Card Wars Adventure Time, which does exactly that. It's a very good CCG, turn-based card game, just like Hearthstone, and you pay for it up front, and it's like £3 or $5, and then you start playing, and you play five games, and it says, your energy's run out. Cooldown timer, wait for an hour, or cough up. I was like, what?
It's a real shame as well, because that is a really good card game as well. I played it up until the wait timer, and then I was just like, you what?
Exactly. It's like we said it before on podcast, but like you can have it one way or the other. If you're going to do free-to-play, fair enough, you can have your cooldown timers. We'll still think it's crap, but you can use them because it's free-to-play and you've got to get money somehow. If you've paid £5 for a game or something, you do not expect wait timers, and that's just bang out of order. So we should stress, yes, Hearthstone, good free-to-play. And good game, too. You can download it right now. Probably people have already been obsessed with it from the PC release, which came a month or two earlier. But I would say give it a go, because it's cracking and you've got no excuse not to if you've got an iPad. Also out, Icarush. Now, I think you and I have slightly differing opinions on this.
Yes.
Right, you go first, because yours is more positive.
I like it. I can see why people don't like it. It's an incredibly simple, tappy arcade game with no particular reason to exist. But it does it incredibly well. It's really tight. It's nicely polished. There's some in-app purchases in it, but it's not icky in-app purchases. There's no wait timers or anything like that. It's just the perfect game to play on a bus.
Right.
When you're going home from work and, you know, you're sad about how everyone picks on you, you can just play Icarus and it'll cheer you up ever so slightly.
Right.
And that's, I think sometimes with the sort of quality of games we get on the App Store, we do sometimes forget that little games like this are important as well. That, you know, you can get your Hearthstones and your Hitmen Goes and your, there are huge expensive productions that fill up hours of your time, and, you know, you sit on your sofa and ignore your friends and don't go out, and that's fine. But at the same time, it's a phone. It's a, you know, it's your go-to thing when you're bored and have a couple of minutes to kill. And I think that's the kind of niche that Icarus fills really, really well.
Yeah, that's very even-handed of you, Parry.
I know. I feel a bit sick.
I know, I'm disgusted. Well, you're wrong, of course, because I don't think it's very good. Well, just to say what it actually is, it's a kind of upward jumping endless scroller thing in which you are Icarus of legendary fame, and you're kind of leapfrogging up these little dots that appear on the screen, all of which have different properties. So you touch the dot and his hand, kind of this magic hand, extends from him, and then he uses that to catapult himself up to the next level, the next kind of bit of the screen, and you need to keep tapping on the dots as and when they appear to carry on climbing and climbing and climbing. So like you say, a quick tappy thing that's nice and easy to play. I didn't like it for two reasons. A, I didn't think it looked very good. I didn't like the visual style. Maybe that's just a taste thing, but like it didn't work for me. I thought it looked kind of crappy. But secondly, it's massively incongruous, right? Because you have Icarus. Your main character is Icarus, whose one defining characteristic is he has wings.
But this is Icarus. The rush is there.
But this,
and then he rushes.
But no, it should be,
did you get? Did you does a rush?
Ica hook shot. It's like he doesn't fly. Like 95% of the game, he doesn't fly. He's like jumping like a monkey from bit to bit to bit to bit. And then when you get this power up chargey bit, you do get a section where suddenly he starts zooming, flying through the air, and you can like move left and right. And when that started, when I played, it was like, oh, this is the game that it should be. And then it stops and goes back to hook shot monkey game.
I guess the thing is, though, if you did make a game about Icarus's attempts to fly, it would be very sad.
Well,
because he would just.
I was waiting for that to happen when I played through, because he starts to, you know, he's hooking his way up into the sky, and the sun does start to appear. So I'm going, oh, yes. Way up. What's going to happen now? I've read this story. This doesn't end well.
There is perhaps more they could have done than just, you know, running with a pun. Yes.
That's what they had. But yeah, you can get it right now. It's 69p or 99 cents. There are, like you say, a couple of in-app purchases, but not ones that are essential to enjoy it, I don't think. There's a first play up on the site, which I think maybe you did. Did you do it?
Yes, yeah. I think my review's up there as well.
Oh, nice. All right, then. So you can give it the full review and video beans over on PG. So go and have a look and make up your own mind. Also out, Yomi. It is another card battler. It's all about the card battlers at the moment. Only this one is, I suppose, a card battler in the truest sense of the term, battle. It's like a side-on beat-em-up, really. So, which might have something to do with the fact that the lead designer of Street Fighter HD Remix created the original card game. So it is a version of that is digital. And so you get your cards on the screen, and two characters appear in classic Street Fighter style, facing off against one another, and you lay down attacks. So each card represents a different kind of attack. So you lay it down on the screen, and then your character goes, whoop-ha! On the screen. Paraphrasing or whatever.
What does your character do?
He goes, whoop-ha, Harry. Whoop-ha. And attacks the other guy, and then they lay down their card, and they, I don't know, loose an arrow in his face or whatever. And the attacks play out like that. It looks really, really, really pretty. Nice anime-looking visuals. It's kind of expensive for an iOS game. It's £6.99 or $9.99. You can do it against AI opponents, so you can fight the computer, or you can do battles with other people, both, like, I think, with your iPad and cross-platform with web browsers.
Yes, I think you can do, like, iPad, like, Game Center-y stuff, I think, and then cross-browser with the browser version of the game, which you can play on your personal computer. Ooh,
which is dead sneaky. I quite like when people go cross-platform. I think that's smart and, you know, should be how most things are, because you want to just, like, spread the pool as wide as you possibly can in terms of the people getting involved, because multiplayer games thrive based on their communities. And if you don't establish a community, then, you got nothing. So it looks really pretty. I haven't played this one yet, but when it appears on the account, I totally will.
It is on the account.
Oh, is it? Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, got code this morning.
I'll have at it then. So that's Yomi, $6.99, $9.99. iPad only?
I think it's iPad only, yeah.
But check it out anyway. You can see the stuff up on the site. And finally this week, Unpossible, which is another endless runner sort of thing, but it seems to be quite a good one. I've played a bit of this, and I quite enjoyed my time with it. It was one of those ones where I start fired up on the Twitch live stream that we do every Wednesday evening, 5 o'clock, AppSpy channel, go and check it out, where I fire it up, and you start talking, like, so this is the game, and we're going to just go, like, immediately, because it just starts. And you're a bot. I don't know actually what you are. You can't see yourself. I assumed you were
a bot. I'd like to imagine it's just like my face. Just rushing. Like it's filming me off the iPad camera and I'm rushing forwards.
Motoring down the outside of this neon pipe. It's a futuristic thing in which you're rolling, I suppose, or running, whatever, along the outside of this twisting tube. And protruding from the tube are various obstacles. So it looks like, imagine an oar if you're rowing a canoe. Imagine that just like bisecting the tube. So bits sticking out on either side. So you have to kind of spin around, move around the outside of the tube to avoid running into it face first. It starts off with obstacles like that. And then more and more obstacles appear. So you get these flat panels that you have to kind of go all the way around 180 to avoid. And then they all start appearing gradually at sort of different angles around the pipe. So you have to, in some cases, kind of hold left or tilt left full, and you'll kind of whoosh around the pipe, going zoom zoom zoom, pirouetting around it to avoid being smashed in the face. It looks very smart. It's very Tron style visuals, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got that sort of grey with neon streams running through it, things sort of going, and it works really well as well. I think it's not too busy visually, because then you'd be getting too confused with the where stuff was, and the quite often with games like this, if it's too bright and shiny and different, then you're sort of distracted from not ploughing your face into things.
Yes.
But the way this is sort of uniform, and you pick the obstacles out really well, and they're always the same colour, there's nothing trying to trick you particularly. Mm. I think that works really well. It's tough.
Yeah. Yes. But I quite like that. It reminded me, not in the sense of the endless runner aspect of it, but it reminded me of Super Hexagon in that way that it's a single mechanic. You just twist. You just rotate, just like Super Hexagon, and you're dodging obstacles that are coming towards you with increasing difficulty, increasing levels of hazard. And it's a sort of Twitch game that you play, and you pick it up, and you go, for about 30 seconds, and then you die. And then, most importantly of all, you hit restart, and it basically immediately restarts. Which...
Yeah, it's got a lot of leaderboard chasing stuff, and you can share replays from it. It's got daily challenges as well. Once you've unlocked, you go for 60 seconds on the first chunk of the game, and then you unlock an even harder chunk, and then you 60 seconds on that, you unlock the next harder chunk. But there's also daily versions of those, so you can like post your scores and stuff.
Futile, or something. And daily futile. Yeah. It was called. I enjoyed my time with it. It was kind of fun. It's £1.49 or $1.99, so it's not the cheapest of cheap games. But again, look at the hands-on videos. We've got them up on both AppSpy and Pocket Gamer, so check them out. The one thing I would ask is, I only played it with the touch controls because I was playing it on the iPad whilst doing the stream, and it's awkward to tilt with that cable coming out of it. Did you tilt or touch?
I tried it with both. Okay. The tilt isn't as good as the touch, I didn't find.
Oh, okay.
It feels just like maybe a millisecond too sluggish.
Right.
So your tilt isn't quite there. I didn't check if there's any sensitivity because I was just literally just having a bash to see how it was. But it's not the best. But with the touch, works really well.
Yeah, I found it quite responsive.
The tilt, not so much.
Good to know. Well, sound advice there. So you can check that out right now. That's Unpossible, £1.49 or $1.99. Come sit upon the throne of games. It's that time once again, time to enter the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. I'm already sitting on it this week because we had loads of news and we're going to motor on straight through. And I'm going to talk about Hitman Go. Gave you a brief introduction earlier. And yeah, it's really good, but not in the way you'd expect. So, if you're thinking about Hitman, if you're a fan of the series and the franchise, you know it's a third-person kind of action shooter sneak-em-up thing in which you control baldy old Agent 47 as he legs it about the place, or stealths about the place, trying to take out his targets, which he can usually do in a variety of ways. The thing that makes a franchise really good is this open-ended nature. So you can either like just storm in there all guns blazing and try and blat everybody within a, you know, visual radius, or you can, I don't know, mug a milkman and dress up in his clothes, put his little hat on, and then kind of walk sneakily through the front door and pretend you're delivering milk, and then shoot everybody in the face, because that's what inevitably happens when I order milk. It's entirely up to you. That's the fun of the game. So when they announced they were doing a mobile version of it, we were kind of like, how is that going to work then? Turns out it's not going to work. Not going to work like that at all. And for the better, I think. Hitman Go is a top-down 3D board game sort of thing, in which you still take control of Agent 47 and have to guide him to an exit point while avoiding being detected and usually going to assassinate someone. But it's done in a kind of grid-based tabletop game sort of way. Agent 47 himself and all of the characters are represented by these Sabutio-esque, you know, tiles, like they're Games Workshop characters or something. And what you have to do is flick him along these pre-prescribed lines. So if you look at the environment, you might see at the beginning, the first box, the first kind of level, and they're all contained in a little box like a board game. It's as if it was an exterior and you're going through this guy's very lavish apartment type place. So it's all outdoors and like there's a tennis court and there's a big, you know, interior complex with glass areas and stuff. And each map, each grid, if you like, you get a line drawn on the floor. And that's the line along which Agent 47 can travel. Same thing with all the other characters. So it's basically a collection of these gridded out lines, and you have to get to the end point. Initially, it's very simple because you're just flicking him left and right and guiding him around. When you encounter some enemies, you'll get guys who initially are just sort of standing there. And you think, right, how am I going to approach this? And you have to try and flick your way around to approach him from either the side or the back. And if you do so and you just run into him, you just flick your character into him, then boom, it'll kill him and he gets knocked off of the board. It's really funny because what would be a lengthy, vicious assassination animation gets turned into like you flicking a Sabutio character off the table.
A little bonk, bonk, next.
Yes, yeah, it's actually quite kind of adorable, yeah. Which is weird and you wouldn't think in a game like this. So you get those characters initially who are just standing there. Then they start to move. So when you move, it's a turn-based game. So you're flicking one kind of grid space at a time. And when you do that, as you're flicking, the other characters will move simultaneously. So when that first happens, you're like, oh, hello, the game's on. And there'll be some characters who move in a set path. So maybe they'll go left two spaces, then turn around, go back two spaces. As they would do in the game, they often follow a set path, or something like Metal Gear, where they're, you know, always you kind of watch them for a while and you learn their habit, their path, and then you can use that to avoid them in the future. Exactly the same thing here. Because you're limited to these grid-based movements, because there's only a single track you can travel around, it has partitions, it has crossroads and things, but you can't just jump off the track and go anywhere you want. It turns it into this very, very tactical, slidey thing where you have to think about 5 or 6 turns ahead in order to get it right and to either sneak past the target or take out the guards and get to your assassination target at the end. There are other items that appear as well. There are ferns which you can jump inside of. And so the enemies can literally stand on the same grid marker as the fern. And if you're secreted inside it, they won't notice you, which is actually brilliant. When I did that for the first time, I was like, is this going to work? Flick! And he just dives inside the fern. I'm like, yes! Come on! This is amazing! And then jumped out the other side and scampered along my way. There are also other items. So there's briefcases, which you can try and pick up, which give you bonuses. And there are items you can use to distract the guards. So if you swipe onto a block, which, for example, has an image of a stone, it'll give you the option to throw that stone into the grid spaces immediately surrounding yours. So it's usually 4 spaces you can throw it to. And if it hits the ground within a decent circumference, within about a grid or two circumference of one of your enemies, they'll hear it and they'll immediately start to approach it turn by turn. So you can use that to draw their attention and then either sneak past them or run up behind them and do them in. So the whole game plays out, you know, in this prescriptive turn-based way. And when you start playing it, you're like, this isn't Hitman. This is really weird. I'm not sure about this. But very quickly, I was turned around. And actually, it does capture the essence of Hitman. Despite the fact that the mechanics are so different, and it's a board game, it's not kind of open for you to wander around wherever you want to go, that core Hitman thing of thinking really tactically, working out what your next move is going to be, trying to execute it, failing, as you'll often do in Hitman when you play these games, then going in and trying a different tactic, and either trying to go in all stealthy or going in and trying to kill everybody. All these options are available in this game, and it weirdly makes you feel like you're playing a Hitman game, even though it's a completely different form. I really, really like it. I played it for about an hour on the stream yesterday because I was supposed to spend equal time on the games, and I totally didn't because I was really enjoying playing Hitman.
Everyone just turn off because go away, I'm playing Hitman now.
Yeah, busy. I didn't want to spoil it for everybody, but I did play through like most of the first entire like section of the game because it was really, really fun. It looks cracking, I should say. It's a minimal diorama art style, but oh, it looks great. Really lovely. Controls beautifully, dead smooth, no nasty IAPs or anything like that. There is an in-app purchase you can buy. I think it unlocks some kind of classic mode or classic skin or something, but you get a big chunk of content. You get like, you know, sort of 50, 60, 70 levels, something like that. And it's cracking good fun. And don't be put off by the fact that it doesn't look like Hitman. It is a puzzle game, sure, but It is Hitman. In essence, at its bleak, dark, murdering heart, it's totally Hitman. And I really enjoyed it. I think we gave it a silver award. Mark liked it as well. Yes. And I would highly recommend it. It's £2.99, $4.99. Hitman Go, out right now. So then, Harry Slater.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
What have you been playing?
I have been playing Anger Force Strikers, which has an amazing name.
I was going to say, that's intimidating.
We're the Anger Force and we're going to strike you.
It is
a top-down bullet hell shooter from a Chinese company, I think. I think it's their first game. Mm-hmm. It is just gorgeous looking. It's sort of cartoon, industrial revolution, steampunk thing going on. And you're a guy kind of hovering around on this gondola thing, blasting just anything that moves. It's got that. It's really weird to me the way that bullet hell shooters are some of the most hardcore games out there. Just the pattern watching and then you can play them just as well with one finger. And I think that is something that is when you look at sort of games that are going to work on an iPad. You never think, yeah, bullet hell, that'll work. But it does. It really does. And like all the sort of ports that have come have all been almost, not better, but just so nice to play just by poking things. Because then it's your finger almost that's involved, and you're sort of tracing your finger through this shower of missiles and lasers and death. And I really, really like them.
You get a kind of one-to-one thing as well that you don't get on the controls. Like the iPad version of Cine Mora.
Yes.
Which is that side-scrolling, very pretty 3D bullet. It looked not quite bullet hell. There weren't enough bullets to classify, but that sort of thing. That played, initially, it was like a bit draggy because you had to use a virtual stick, but then they gave it a one-to-one touchscreen control system. And that was like, oh, this is much better. Ooh, zooming around. And also, Ikaruga came out, which I haven't played on iOS yet, but I want to because I'm a big fan of that game.
The Dodonpachi stuff.
Yes, Peter's a big bullet hell shooter fan, and I kind of dabble because they are, like you say, it's a simple control mechanic, just drag your finger around, but they become unbelievably difficult, inevitably.
Yeah, this one does become incredibly difficult as well. It's got some extra bits as well. Strange, slight departure from the usual bullet hell stuff. You're firing even if you're not touching the screen.
Quite
a lot of them, when you lift your finger off to stop moving, they'll stop firing. But this time, you're just firing all the time.
Fair enough.
Which is nice. And you've got sort of special moves that power up, and you can blast them out by tapping on the left of the screen. Loads of different... I think there's four different characters you can play as, and they're all sort of different strengths and weaknesses and stuff and speed. Right. There's 12 levels as well, so it's a nice, big, fat, chunky... It's the sort of thing that it's not so much a bus game, maybe a train game. I like to define things, like, could even be a ferry game.
To define games purely by modes of transportation.
Yeah, that's math. That's what I've been doing this week.
Nice. All right.
So there's a good, a thick chunk of game there. It's got, I think it's got iCade support as well, if you've got one of those weird things, so you can not play it with your single finger if you want, but it's definitely worth a try. It's I believe it's £1.99/$2.99.
And what's it called? It's
called Anger Force Strikers.
I just like
Anger Force
Dash say that.
Strikers.
That's awesome. Where does it fit in the scale of difficulty? Is it ludicrously hard like some of them, or is it manageable?
It's the first two or three levels, probably you'll get through quite happily. You'll probably sweat a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it does ramp up after that, but not in a I hate you game. It doesn't make it doesn't force your anger. See what I did there?
Oh yeah, that's very good. But and it doesn't make you want to strike your iPad.
I don't get it.
Oh, okay, never mind. I think that's what puts some people off the genre, though. I do think you look at it and go, whoa, that's no, I'm not going anywhere near that. But I think it's slightly more accessible than you might initially think, the bullet hell genre. Because I've heard different ways of looking at it, because in some ways, bullet hell shooters aren't shooters.
No.
In the strictest sense of the word. They're actually maze games.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're trying to pick your way through the fog of bullets, that just storm of it that kind of just ends the screen. And so in some ways you're actually, and you're learning the perfect time when I'm a tiny bit left here, tiny bit right, this pattern's going to come, so I need to move around. And in that regard, it's kind of like, it's almost more like something like Super Hexagon, where you're choosing the right moment to move and what and when.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Twitch games, like that Super Hexagon, that are sort of further distillations of that. They're further refinements of that bullet hell sort of thing, that they've just chopped away all the show of it, almost, just, and it's down to its barest bones. But this has got lots of bones.
lots of bones. Because at that point, when you nail it all down, it's kind of like, it becomes, for me, pure game.
Mm.
Like, no pretense and no nothing, and that's why I'm such a Super Hexagon fan. It's just like, that's just pure game.
Yeah,
there's nothing there, but only the very minimum of what needs to be there in order to make it a functional, working mechanic. And then you're just buggering about that mechanic and just having just a whale of a time. And say, even though bullet hells can look a bit shooty and complicated and certainly can be quite difficult, I would encourage people to give it a go, even if they haven't. If you hadn't played it before, like any kind of bullet helly thingy, do you think people could get into this?
I think it's less... With a sort of more cartoony art style that it's got, it feels a bit more welcoming. And there's quite a big tutorial in it as well,
okay,
if you're a bit lost and confused. But it's £2. You may as well have a pop.
Yeah. All right, then. Excellent. Well, check that out, and definitely give Hitman Go a look. Don't be put off by the style, because it's kind of quality. Which brings us to the end of this week's cast. Thanks to Harry for joining us again, and hopefully we haven't put you off too much. You will return in the future.
I'll think about it, but we have to discuss Mad Money.
All right, then. The fee will be discussed. And Peter, and I'm sure Keith at some point will return in the future as well. So join us again next week for another Pocket Gamer podcast. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.